Episode 144 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded August 10th, 2017. Gross! You guys know why we titled this episode Gross?
Because you are grossed out by Wet Hot American Summer, because wet hot makes you think of moist. People hate the word moist.
We could have called this Wet Hot Gross American Summer, I suppose. Numerically, the number 144 is a dozen dozens.
Yep.
Also known as a gross.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
It's good.
Right. So, what's
a Google again?
I think it's
a one with
like a million zeros after it?
It's the artificial intelligence that rules over all of us.
Yeah, that's right. It's the real world Skynet.
I'm honestly surprised my computer didn't answer you. Like, Google, don't worry about Google. It's fine. Everything's cool.
Do not ask us.
Do not ask about the Google.
I guess there's some gross stuff going on in these shows.
Yeah.
The past couple weeks, Game of Thrones was gross, especially with the Samwise little montage sequences that they were doing.
And that amazes me because it has been such a family-friendly, just stick to the censor script.
It's true.
Yeah.
Show for so many seasons.
Why
now.
Would they That's deviate true. All of a sudden?
Oh,
like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, really family-friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Game of Thrones is really a gather up all the small children and all your pets and just watch it together.
You want to gather them up in your fallout shelter.
Yeah.
Because we're on the precipice of nuclear holocaust, guys.
See, this is how I can tell you weren't alive in the 80s, Grant.
Oh, yeah? I was.
Yeah, but not at the same age that I was, because I'm like, North Korea's going to nuke us. This is not Russia.
Yeah, but... We didn't have Trump in charge.
Yeah, no, we had Reagan.
But to be fair, no one listens to Trump.
None of his Not people. Even his generals.
I think he might be talking.
So that's good. That's
we should
good.
Say this for the Patreon. I feel like he's talking to the one crazy fucker on the planet who might be listening to him.
Okay, guys. We are talking this week about People of Earth and the guest book over on TBS, one of which is returning for its second season, the other debuting. And Wet Hot American Summer, 10 years later, the second TV season of the series over on Netflix. And then, of course, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones because holy shit.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But before we get into all that, we are the TV Dudes, and I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And if you guys want to help support us, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. Give us a dollar or two an episode. In exchange, you guys know what I'm saying.
No, I don't know what you're, well, you lost me.
In exchange, sometimes I get a lot of spit in my mouth, Randy. Yep. Don't look at me. Now I'm not going to edit it out. In
Keep
exchange,
it in. Keep it in.
You get bonus exclusive content. And this week, you know what? We're going to talk about nuclear war.
Yeah.
Because apparently I'm a little wet behind my ears about being afraid of the big one.
You and everyone I know, including people who were around in the 80s. I don't know why y'all are so freaked out about it. Nothing you can do about it.
Because it didn't happen then.
Can we just call it global thermonuclear war every time we say it from now on? I will feel better about it if it just sounds more war gamey.
Yeah. Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That was a movie in the 80s?
It was before your time. I'm sitting over here trying to figure out how the fuck old Grant is now.
I thought
you were
ancient.
An adult, so.
Yes, so patreon.com/TV Dudes. We appreciate all the support, guys. Another way you guys can help us is we're part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
And it's a collection of TV podcasts, and we are promoting one of our own this month, Marvel TV Binge, which you can find at marveltvbinge.com, is our buddies Mike Moody, Martin Thomas, and Nate Bliss. They talk about the Marvel shows that are on Netflix, I guess.
For a while.
We'll
get
to
that.
They get to binge through it and then they're done. But Defenders is coming back, I believe, next week, the 19th.
Yeah, that's correct.
So this week they should be doing a little preview episode. So stay tuned. That's marveltvbinge.com.
Yeah.
All right, listener questions. You guys ready?
Are you ready?
I didn't fully look through all of these, so I'm not sure what I'm going to stumble upon here.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
But if you guys like us on Facebook, you can ask us questions once a week. Our first one we'll give to our buddy Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi, dudes. You've been given a monkey's paw to grant you one TV-related wish. for each of you. You can wish for a series to be revived, canceled, or modified in any way, including the cast, crew, and channel or distributor. However, the other dudes have to agree on the negative drawback for the wish. Oh, boy. What crazy wishes will you think of? Terriers is revived, but with Scott Buck as the showrunner.
Oh, God.
The Big Bang Theory is canceled, but every character gets a spinoff series. Oh, man. Game of Thrones is 100% faithful to the books, except the entire cast is played by dwarves, while Tyrion is played by a really tall person.
First of all, I want to say...
That would be fucking awesome.
I would watch
the hell out of that.
Yeah. In fact, someone should make that.
Yeah, please.
First of all, I believe the monkey spot probably belonged to Bear from BJ and the Bear. Mm. I think you're going to keep it TV-related.
Or it could be Ross's monkey.
Or Ross's monkey, yeah.
There you go, from Friends.
Yep.
All right, one TV-related wish.
Yep. All right, I'm not bringing Terriers back with a monkey's paw. I know better. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, because we'd fuck with it.
I know that. That's a bad idea. So what am I going to revive that I really want back? I think let's go with one we're going to talk about later. Let's go Hannibal. I want my Silence of the Lambs Hannibal season. I want it back. I want Brian Fuller, and I want it on Netflix.
You don't have to do this. They're in talks.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you get to also request Brian Fuller and everything else. I mean,
he said you can include the cast, crew, channel distributor, revive, cancel, or modified. So I'm saying I want the whole thing set. I want the everything as it was, same cast. But I want Brian Fuller running it, but I want it on Netflix instead of on NBC, who really didn't know what's the wrong place to have it. What monkey's paw happens?
Okay, but Netflix makes it like their Puss in Boots Interactive.
Oh, God.
And so every episode requires 3 or 4 reboots through it, you know, when it just hangs or freezes. And the choices are constantly like Hannibal just kind of dancing from one foot to the other while you pick.
Oh, man. That is pretty
terrible. That's pretty good. This is pretty good.
Les, you have a monkey's paw wish?
There's a reality show that I want ended, but I'm afraid that it would that striking them down would make them stronger.
Yep.
So I don't want anything revived because I don't want it revived ruined. So I'm going to go with the simple answer. I want the OA to stop.
Okay.
This is true.
Yeah. Yeah. The OA stops. And it's Britt Marling, isn't that the person?
Marling.
Britt Marling. But Britt Marling launches a new – because the OA is done, has time to launch 2 new shows, one on Netflix, one on Hulu. And then there are 30-second ads played before every Netflix and Hulu show because they're really pushing it.
And
as bad as I was thinking.
And the show she's making is actually a remake of The Middleman.
That's more in line of what I was thinking. Was like that. I strike her down and she becomes showrunner for a revived like Night Court and The Middleman. Or yeah,
just like fucking terrible. I want CBS gone.
CBS, the network.
Can I just destroy an entire network?
The entire network. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Gone.
However, because CBS is gone, every other network has to start programming for the old people they were programming. Now there's more procedurals everywhere, Grant, everywhere. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, HBO, they all have NCISs now, Grant. It's your fault.
I took one down and it became a Hydra.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's about where I was going to go with that. Like, yes, but now all the streaming services hire up those guys.
So you got to think, CBS, it's like containing a virus. It's like a leper colony for all the procedurals and all the people who watch them.
This is a brilliant question, Jonathan. Thank
this
you.
Is great. Yes.
All right. Next one comes to us from Benjamin Hamill, who says, "Hey dudes, if you were somehow stranded on a desert island for the rest of your life, which 5 TV shows would you not want to live without? And just for argument's sake, let's say you have to choose TV shows as they stand right now. So, if the shows are not completed, Game of Thrones, The Americans, etc., you won't see the end. Just assume that everything you need to survive on this island, shelter, food, water, electricity, and fleshlight, if you're into that sort of thing, wink, wink, it'll probably get pretty lonely out there, and a big screen TV and a Blu-ray DVD player." Wow, this is a pretty nice setup.
First of all, Benjamin, thank you for thinking of all our needs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's appreciated. That cracked me up.
Hopefully everyone else in this question list also thought of all of our needs.
This is a good caveat, by the way, because I would not take Game of Thrones if I could never see the end. That would be especially if I'm on a desert island, if I can't like talk and speculate with other people, that is a one way ticket to madness.
Yeah.
But I would take Cheers, of course, lots of shows, and very watchable.
There's one.
I would take Breaking Bad because I could watch that one over and over again. It's a good complete series.
Fuck yeah.
I would take Lost because Lost is a show that rewards rewatching. It's a lot of episodes, and thematically, it just kind of fits.
Yeah,
you know, you feel like, oh, well, at least I'm not on the Lost Island right now. Let's see, I'd take another comedy. Let's say Simpsons. I will take. Do you know how many new Simpsons I'd have to watch if I took all the Simpsons? I haven't watched Simpsons in like 10 years.
Jeez.
I would take all the Simpsons.
You'd be like skipping entire seasons. Yeah. Just going, oh.
Nope, I'd be like, you know what? I need something new. There's probably some Simpsons I haven't seen.
You should get some Lonesome Dove in there.
And I would take Terriers because, of course, I'm taking Terriers.
Okay. Less. Are you going to be able to rattle them off that easy?
Yeah. I'd take Middleman. I think that's just an insanely densely packed, nerd rewatchable show.
You both are taking some one seasons.
Yeah. Just one.
I would take Community.
Oh, that's a good one.
Six seasons.
Yeah.
Most of it is infinitely rewatchable.
Yeah.
I would take Deadwood as a complete rewatchable series.
Yep.
I would take Night Court. It's my Cheers.
Yeah.
There's just a ton of episodes, and I just find them all charming.
I'm going to allow it.
The Simpsons, I had not considered, but your point stands. I can't think of any other show that has at least a decade I've not freaking seen. There's got to be like 8 or 10 years of Simpsons that I've not seen. Yeah. I'll be sitting on the island like, nah, you know what? I'm going to say back the Simpsons.
Yeah. And there's got to be some gems in there.
Little Man. Yeah. I mean, it can't all suck.
Right.
Do you have one more?
Do I?
No, you got everything.
Simpsons, Night Court, Middleman. Deadwood Community.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
Great. Let's hear it.
Lost.
Of course.
Breaking Bad, I think is a great one. Get out of here. Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know we have another season upcoming, but whatever.
Yeah.
I can end on 4 and still be fine.
Yep.
You know what? I feel like I should take some show that's like going to help me with like survival or something. Maybe like Mythbusters or
oh, that's a good one.
Some kind of show. I'm trying to think of like a good survival one that like teaches you techniques.
I figure if we've got shelter, food, water, electricity, we're covered. I feel the Dharma Initiative's got to be taking care of this thing.
Yeah.
They're dropping fleshlights every week that have Dharma Initiative branding on them. Fleshlights.
It's in the question.
I really thought that's what you said.
That's what it said. That's what the question said. Did you not? A no. Fleshlight.
Oh my God. I completely fixed that to a much, much,
much safer.
Every time you were hearing flashlight. Yeah. And you're like,
he said fleshlight. Nope. There are Dharma Initiative fleshlights coming down on this island every week, along with the food and water, hopefully separate.
Oh man. What's my last one going to be?
I don't know. Suspense is killing me.
I'm going to take X-Files.
Oh, that's a good one. You know what else?
For those spooky nights.
I wouldn't do it. But if I were to not take Terriers because it's a one season, NCIS, I know this is a friend of mine just finished watching it, has 22 seasons of 22 episodes. You would never run out. I mean,
I feel like I would just find other activities to do on this island.
If I didn't take Middleman for being one season, the first thing that popped in my head was another short show. I would take Sports Night.
Oh yeah.
But honestly, I think Sports Night's a better Sorkin example, but I'm really just wanting that kind of writing, so I would just take West Wing, which has a shitload of episodes.
Even
the Lawrence O'Donnell years are fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna drop my X-Files and I'm gonna take Friday Night Lights. Not like anyone's really keeping count, but
that's pretty good.
Very rewatchable.
I might drop Lost and take West Wing.
Okay. We got our list then.
Yep, we got
our list. Keep Lost. I love it. All right, next question comes to us from Justin Zarian, who says, dudes, I gotta ask. Oh, wait, I saw Justin Zarian this weekend.
Yeah?
Awesome. Nice dude, and I watched him do the limbo. He was at the Double Toasted event. That's pretty cool. He says, I know that think pieces on television have been around forever, and they can offer unique insights into criticism and analysis for certain shows, like the think pieces that deconstructed True Detective Season 2 before it was even finished. However, I feel conflicted to read think pieces because so many of them feel knee-jerk reactionary, purposefully trolling, and overall too clickbaity. I want to engage in critical discourse, but it's hard when the articles feel underthought or not genuine. Do you feel the value of think pieces is shrinking because of stuff like this? And what is your protocol for weeding out the good pieces from the bad?
Les, you have some thoughts on this.
I do. I don't think the value of think pieces is shrinking because of this. If anything, I think the value of actual think pieces is increasing. The problem is finding actual think pieces in the glut of totally clickbait, reactionary, hot take bullshit.
Yes.
Like the constant example I use is like the Monday article of like greatest thing you've never heard of. And then the Thursday article, thing we told you to love Monday, but does it suck?
Yeah.
And like every fucking week. And this, like, you know you're being played. Like it makes it so you not just can't trust critical reviews, you can't trust praiseful review. Like
you can't even trust some websites that you think, oh, this person's really great, but everyone else on this article is churning out bullshit.
Like the amount of times that I click on an article that makes a premise in the headline and then read it, and that is not the premise of what was actually reported. I think there's one in our news tonight actually. But you realize that these are two or three paragraphs that is literally just someone else re-summarizing a deadline link or a Screen Rant link, like some other link.
I read some Vulture article that took a paragraph from an interview in some other article and then just like summarized that and wrote like two or three bullshit article, like paragraphs about it. I was like, what is that?
It's usually real easy to tell. I see this a lot in comic stuff that – and that's because I know that world so well. But you can definitely do it in TV and film too, where if you can see when someone is clearly just speculating on something else. So when someone writes an article about, you know, is there a new Muppet show coming? Because someone asked the actress who once played Miss Piggy if she'd do a reboot on a red carpet. And she said, oh, I'd be up for it. And then they spend 20 paragraphs on here's how it would happen.
Yeah.
With the more speculation there is in it, the more, hey, here's a thought experiment for what might happen. The more you know this is a bullshit think clickbait piece, not a think piece.
Yeah. I mean, the Munsters reboot piece that we have in news tonight is the example of this, where literally the only news is that Seth Meyers is going to do a Munsters reboot.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only thing reported. From there, there's three paragraphs about how, well, it's being done through Universal, who owns those rights, so hopefully they'll use the classic monster designs instead of what Brian Fuller did.
Yeah.
And then there's another paragraph about how, despite Universal also owning all those properties for the movies, they just recently did not use the classic monster designs. And then another paragraph about how they really hope they will. The thrust of the piece is summed up as like Seth Meyers is going to go classic. I mean, no, it's not. You just fucking speculated that.
It's some poor bastard whose job it is to write an article every hour, and he's like, I got nothing. Holy shit. This guy said he'd do something. All right. I'm going to make up a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. It's a 24-hour water cooler.
Yeah.
You've got to keep supplying.
I mean, it's find some think pieces that you really enjoy. Make note of who the author is and then try and follow them.
Yeah. The last part of Justin's question about how do you find there's no – ironically, there's no reviewer to read to tell you who else is a good reviewer.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have – like. The only way to know is to read a bunch of that person's reviews and to go, hey, I, on the balance, agree with Roger Ebert, except on movies like blah, and then he and I tend to diverge.
Like,
you'll figure that out over time, but you've got to read the pieces.
Yeah, it's true. You got to find your guys that you like.
And I absolutely know Justin's got a longer list of people he's read and figured out than I do, probably. Yeah.
I will say this, though. One of the things that is really – and this is a problem not just with TV but all news – is that how credulous people can be. So one of these think pieces is real insidious because right now there's this piece about the Munsters that says nothing. And I guarantee you someone is going to come to someone tomorrow and go, you heard about that Munsters reboot that's happening? They're using the classic monsters. The speculation becomes a fact so fucking fast. And it's corrupt. It corrupts the conversation.
Yeah. I don't know.
I hate it.
Alec Miracle says, how do you think the creators of Game of Thrones will wrap up the series? Will they wrap it up with the White Walkers who claim the Iron Throne? Or maybe will everything wrap up simultaneously? Like, will there be, like, White Walker first, then the Iron Throne, I guess?
I have a theory, but I don't know. My theory, the way they're going, I think Cersei's going to wind up teamed up with Daenerys and everybody else against the White Walkers.
Yeah.
I think some crazy shit's going to happen.
And then they'll go, why are we so petty about a throne? We should all make a new democracy.
No, then Cersei will die. I think there's no way that Cersei could ever be a cooperative. But I do think there's a swerve coming. I don't think it's all going to be Daenerys or whoever takes the Iron Throne, and then it's the White Walkers. I think the White Walkers are going to come in the middle of something else happening.
Mm.
That's my theory.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just long for the ride at this point.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think all of Daenerys's dragon children are going to die, and Jon Snow, the only son of ice and fire, is going to take the throne.
It's also possible.
Where are you
three
at?
Three and a half fucking episodes of this.
Okay, okay. I was about to say, where are you in the series? Ross Brown says, people can wait years for a sequel to a movie without much complaint. However, people always seem to go nuts when a TV show takes a year off, despite being a format that gives you more content in one go. Do you think there's a reason for this, or are people just weird?
To me, this relates to the think piece a little bit. It's the 24-hour water cooler of it. Television, different from movies to me, is the long-form story. You get a new fix of story like every night or two or three a night or at least once a week if it's dropping like Handmaid's Tale and stuff on Hulu or, I guess, regular TV.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
I think I guess.
But it's in your home. It's a constant kind of reinforced fix that goes on for months of this story that you're hooked into, as opposed to a movie that can be like a special occasion rental night or sit down and watch at night or go to the theater. So I feel like you kind of put the movies on a back burner and like, oh, hey, yeah, there's that special occasion coming up. Whereas when your TV show's gone, that's a hole in your night that is suddenly not filled.
It's a seasonal like expectation. You're like, oh, it's the fall time. It's time for my next season of Blue Bloods or whatever the fuck.
I think there's something else to it, though, which is I think that there's an awareness that movies take a long time to make. That movies are like, oh, okay, we got to get all these people together. We got to get all this. There's post-production, all this thing. And there's this thought that TV is faster. And it is faster.
Well,
but it's not that much faster.
Well, that's because there's been this whole change in the dynamic in TV and how it's produced.
Yeah.
TV used to be churned out cheaply and with a very rigid structure for storytelling. And there's been a huge demand by audiences, and we're being rewarded for what they're doing. Yeah. But they're being a lot more experimental with how they navigate and tell stories and make things a lot more enriching for us. And so sometimes that takes a lot more time to develop.
But I think it is also a scale. People don't want their TV delayed by a season, but if they were to tell everyone tomorrow, hey, yeah, Infinity War is taking longer than we thought, so Avengers Infinity War is getting pushed to 2019, people would lose their shit.
But Game of Thrones, they can delay it, and we'll just go, fine.
Yeah.
Because they've paid their dues, and now we can wait.
Yes.
I feel like in both cases that we're just putting up with that. That if they started dropping more theatrical release movies to video on demand, people would start to get more impatient for the gap between.
I agree.
I think they're keeping a special prestige difference still that's going to erode.
Yeah, Marvel is definitely the template that's showing us how we're like, all right, when's our next fix?
Yeah, I mean, Marvel could put out a new movie every month. They wouldn't. It would be a disaster because they wouldn't all be able to keep up with the money. But as far as the amount of people they have, they could be releasing new movies every month if they wanted to. But like Les says, it'd be a disaster because they'd have people get jonesing for that.
But our patience between it, I don't think, is because like a group of comic fans stood back and went, no, let's be reasonable.
Yeah.
It's going to take them a year to do this right, and we should be paid.
That has never happened.
No.
That has never happened.
Comic-Con would light torches. Everybody would light their fleshlights on fire and hold them above their heads. That would be so gross.
Well, I mean, they throw them away. The Dharma box drops a new one.
Yeah.
Fine. All right, last question comes to us from Mike Chung, who says, what's this? So, Grant, if I were to take you to Virginia to get consensual sex out of you, where would you like it to be? Public park, movie theater, library, coffee shop? He's giving me a lot of options here.
So many questions.
Thanks for all the contents, guys. And see you soon, Grant, menacingly.
Okay, I need to know either what is with you and Virginia that you would suddenly consent to this if you were taken across that state line, or what is with Virginia's consent laws?
Virginia's for lovers.
Okay, is that the pure thing? Like,
was that the joke we must have made?
I assume.
Like, I don't remember. Like, there was a previous question.
Okay.
Where he's been building up to this.
Like how a serial killer starts with animals.
Hey, I find your voice really sexy. No one finds my voice sexy, by the way, so that's a lie. And then, now it's full on. We're having consensual sex. It's always mandated consensual.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud of him.
I appreciate consensual.
I thought either like Grant has some like, I go Virginia crazy. And
when in Virginia, that's my Vegas, baby.
You was Virginians, you.
Geez, I get to my pick of venue. I'm going to go with the police station.
That's not on the list.
Because maybe it's not so consensual.
Not on the list. You have to pick between the public park, a movie theater, a library, or a coffee shop.
Wait.
One of those four.
It doesn't say I have to pick one of those.
No, I'm the executive decision here. I believe that. Let's back me up on this.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah. That's the two of us have agreed. There's a quorum.
I mean, I feel like the public park is just
we're
going to
make a Clue-style board game out of this.
We're gonna kickstart that next week.
It's always a candlestick, Grant.
It was Mike and Grant in the coffee shop with the glory hole.
The TCAs were this weekend or something like that. The TCAs are the Television Critics Association.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a bunch of news.
They like didn't invite us. News. Again.
Again.
Yeah.
We even sent them flowers. We sent them Dharma Initiative fleshlights.
We sent them so many fleshlights.
Yeah, so many fleshlights.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys know this. There aren't actually Dharma Initiative. We had to draw the Dharma Initiative on every single one of them.
They were stamped and approved, inspected by all of us.
Hand-drawn.
We made sure all of them work.
Lovingly crafted. Hand tested
and gently used. Oh god!
And yet, no invitation to the TCAs.
So, on a related note, but we were also blacklisted from the TCAs.
Also, we can't use the mail anymore.
No.
No, but there's a bunch of news that came out, and it's all kind of related. So, I'm going to start with the one that crossed over into my comics world stuff. Miller World, Mark Miller. That's the guy who did the Kingsman movie, Wanted. I know he's got another one that he did. That's
Infamous. What's the Nemesis?
Nemesis.
No, there's one that got made.
There's one that actually got made into a movie, and not just Logan, which is based on an old man Wolverine, but
it was Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass. Thank you.
Oh yeah.
So he's had a recently successful movie career. Netflix basically acquired Miller World. We don't know exactly what acquisition means. Whether it was a swap for
what's Miller
shares.
World? Does he?
That's his imprint.
That is his imprint. It's his comic book company. Now, I thought this sounded crazy, but he's got like 10 different properties there that he already – and then he's going to keep developing. So he's got – you know, leaving aside the Kingsman and Kick-Ass, which are not included in the deal, but he's got Nemesis. He's got he's got a one that's like a Buck Rogers, but it's sort of a old man Logan – Unforgiven style Buck Rogers story called Starlight that's really good. He's got MPH, which is a take on Speedsters. He's got
The Ultimates?
No Ultimates.
Red Sun, is that in there?
Nope. Ah. Just his creator-owned. He has a ton of creator-owned stuff. This is a smart move on their part, and I wondered when I saw this news if maybe Netflix was shoring up against the possibility of losing Marvel because that's a license deal. Everybody saw those stories about Netflix being over-leveraged and having spent so much money and that they had to license the Marvel stuff. It wasn't actually theirs. And then the next day, the news hit that Disney is ending their Netflix deal and launching their own streaming service.
Yup.
I'll be honest. I don't have kids. And so when I first saw this, I was like, so the Disney movies aren't on Netflix. All right.
Yeah.
It did not click for me that this meant the – I also don't care about Star Wars – that this – means the end of Marvel's Netflix. Because
also,
I was just thinking, like, out of ABC and Netflix, if I was going to pull those properties away from one of those two things, I'd be like, yeah, Netflix, you – wait.
Yeah, but Disney owns ABC.
That's right.
And also
– only ABC could get some money or
packing. ESPN is in the Disney brand. So all those 30 for 30s,
those
are going
too.
That's
right. Those are going too.
So it's a big chunk of stuff. Yeah. And they signed this deal in 2012, but it didn't start happening till like last year. And then they're pulling this stuff, I think, in 2019. So this is we're way ahead of – but Disney's going to pull all this stuff and make their own streaming service.
Yeah, they are.
Which makes sense. I mean, Disney has enough content. If they put all their stuff on there, it potentially could get people to pick it up.
If their original programming just under them and not like in collaboration with Netflix or ABC, well, ABC is them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, man.
All of Disney XD will be on it.
Their shows kind of suck.
I don't know, man. They have a lot of good stuff on Disney XD. They have DuckTales.
Okay, yeah.
They have they're gonna have Star Wars Rebels.
If we get Tailspin and
if like all the classic Disney stuff went up there,
yeah.
Like the Lilo and Stitch TV show, which is not available anywhere, it was really good.
Gummy Bears
and all their classic movies. They've got. I do feel like in general the constant adding of new a la carte channels that are $7.99 a pop,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That has to top out soon.
Yeah.
But it's just getting insane. Like, start licensing together. But
yeah.
Disney pulled this off with a pay channel 15, 20 years
before. Yeah, they had the Disney channel.
Like, the Disney channel was a pay channel or around when I was a kid, and it's been a pay channel now for years. And they've managed to do this then because they were already Disney. And that was before they acquired Marvel and
Star Wars. Yeah.
So they can definitely do this. Yeah. They are maybe the only one I can think of that can launch a $7.99. Now, if somebody stupid were to do it like CBS, I would have doubts.
All Miramax channels.
But here's the thing. CBS may be able to pull off because they're putting an original Star Trek series on there.
And honestly, I like The Good Fight, too. If you like The Good Wife at all, they continue that show.
But the brilliant thing is DC or Disney, if they do have their Disney show, they could launch – if they put an original Star Wars show on that streaming service or another Marvel show that spins off from Netflix.
Oh, yeah. If you think Trek fans are willing to give CBS All Access a shot for a month, they would sign up for a year contract if it meant making another Star Wars show.
Yeah.
Star Wars fans would.
So I am quite sure that Disney's streaming service will wind up – I say now I'm not buying any more streaming services. But as soon as they announce, oh, yeah, we're going to be doing what Marvel did. We're going to do Marvel TV shows or we're going to do Star Wars TV shows. I'm like, fuck, okay, here's my $8.
Put all those movies up and open the Disney vault and start actually putting some of those films up.
Yep.
That'd be great.
Yep. All right. Netflix is hardly hurting, though, because – in addition to Miller World, which is going to be the superhero substitute, David Letterman is coming to TV to do a Netflix series.
Awesome.
That is so crazy. Like, I assume we'd never see David Letterman again unless you're wandering in the woods and you saw a bearded man that turned out to be David Letterman.
But the Bill Nye comeback was great. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, he's talking about doing a new Netflix series starting in 2018, hour-long episodes with long-form interviews and in-the-field segments. 6 episodes, by the way. So not a ton.
I haven't gotten a chance to see it, but Norm MacDonald just started a new series, and his first interview is with David Letterman,
and
because they're like great buds. And I heard it's a really great interview, and it's actually surprisingly serious on Norm MacDonald's end.
Yeah, I need to check that out. I saw this is Letterman's statement was, I feel excited and lucky to be working on this project for Netflix. Here's what I have learned. If you're retired to spend more time with your family, check with your family first. It's just so perfect.
That's great.
So I'm excited. And also, Netflix picked up the Coen Brothers production, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the Western anthology series.
Yeah. I mean, you knew this was going to go to a good home.
I thought it was going to land on like HBO or something. But yeah, Netflix is perfect.
And it's got Tim Blake Nelson in the lead, right?
Oh, fuck yeah.
I love Tim Blake Nelson. If anybody hasn't seen Leaves of Grass, the movie with him and Ed Norton, he just steals it.
Yeah.
And if you guys haven't seen The Incredible Hulk, he's in that.
This is true. He's also... also in that.
American Crime Story is getting a Katrina season, as we'd already heard.
Well, no, but they're dropping the Katrina storyline.
Right. It's a revamped version of – so it's now going to be based on a day. It's called 5 Days at Memorial, which is the hospital in New Orleans during and after the August 2005 storm. So it's very – it's sort of a specific, which is – makes sense because that's what the OJ was. It was based on the run of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably good. It probably means that it will not go in sort of Murphy's more crazy direction and more like what he did on American Crime.
I'm pretty sure I heard an interview. I'm not sure on what podcast, but I think I heard an interview with one of the nurses that was at one of these hospitals when everything was getting flooded and it was fucking nuts and trying to – like people are dying in the hallways and they're trying to get them to the roof for like helicopters to come get them. And – it's a bonkers story.
It's a tragic story, too. It'll be interesting to see. They mention here that like this can be interesting to see trying to find the – without the lighter notes of the O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
Even though that was a tragedy, it had the sort of wackiness of celebrity.
I imagine Sarah Paulson's going to be that doctor that I heard in the interview who's like trying to just perform emergency triage on the spot with all these people.
Yes, I think they actually said that she's going to be Dr. Anna Powell.
Okay.
Yeah. And also the interesting note, this makes me a little sad, is that previously they had set Dennis Quaid to be George W. Bush, Matthew Broderick as Michael Brown, and Annette Bening as Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco.
Wow.
That casting is off, but the producers will attempt to find other roles for those actors to play.
What about Kanye and Mike Myers?
Playing themselves. Actually, weirdly, Kanye plays Mike Myers and Mike Myers plays Kanye.
Oh, my God. You know Mike Myers would love that.
On a related note, they've said that the American Horror Story cult season is going to be a Trump analog.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they're going to go at that, but...
How do you guys...
I saw a bus full of clowns in one of their ads.
It could be a lot of seasons.
How do you guys feel about revivals? You want to talk about like 100 revivals?
I mean...
Because there's a lot of revival news going around.
It seemed like we slowed down on our revival stuff for a bit. But
we're ramping back. Let's start with one that's not happening. We just love this article because of the headline. Fraser revival is unlikely, according to NBC chairman.
I would like to check back in on this.
This came back in. So it was asked at TV Line, asked him. He said he's had conversations. Fraser would be great. I'd love to bring him back. We put out feelers over. Don't think there's any real interest. I think everyone's moved on. Now – part of that, the tragedy, is that David Angel, the co-creator, died in the 9/11 attacks. He was on one of the planes. But also that the cast is largely – like Kelsey Grammer's in The Last Tycoon on Amazon. David Hyde Pierce is working. Jane Leaves came off Hot in Cleveland, which I really like Jane Leaves, and I'm sorry about that she's on – I mean, it's six seasons. Good that Jane Leaves gets to eat, but Hot in Cleveland, really?
Six seasons.
That's money.
But I'm sadder because Perry Gilpin is recurring on Scorpion, that dumbass CBS show.
Oh.
So I would like Frasier to reboot just to save these people from their careers.
David Hyde Pierce was in a brief cameo on Wet Hot American Summer this season, and I loved it.
Yeah. 24 is in development in the early stages of a non-CTU 24.
Another reboot.
Yeah, because Legacy did not work.
We're like 29 or 30 now, right?
This is great. Network chairman and CEO Dana Walden stated she and others are working toward producing a new series that, quote, genuinely extends the life of the 24 franchise, which is some serious shade throwing at 24 Legacy. Not like that fucked up 24 Legacy we ran.
Ow.
Yeah, that is rough. That is not good. And the Fox president, David Madden, stated that the producers have a really exciting idea that will take that same kind of ticking clock urgency and apply it to something else.
Is that something going to be gun-related with, like, terrorists?
I hope it's like a cooking show. 24, but Jack Bauer has to cook an omelet in a certain amount of time or the terrorists win.
Is this another Monkey's Paw thing?
Yeah, it's a Monkey's Paw thing. Fox is working on a King of the Hill revival.
Yes.
I don't know. Do we want King of the Hill back?
Is Mike Judge involved?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, let's look at this, because I'm just assuming that we had everybody back. Like, you're just bringing back King of the Hill as it was, but that's
early
probably
talks
not
with
happening,
Judge
right?
and Daniels. So Judge, right. Mike Judge, Greg Daniels. Yeah, so that's
I would watch more King of the Hill.
I never really got into it. I don't think I ever really liked the animation, and that's why I couldn't get past.
I didn't. And when it first started airing, I didn't like the animation, and I was trying desperately to move out of that town.
Yeah.
So it wasn't funny. Like, I got to college and would like walk through the dorm and see kids from up north watching it and laughing. Like, why? What do y'all even get out of this? Like, man, there's all this weird shit. Like, no. All of that's real. Fire ants are real.
Yeah.
I've been to that Halloween protest. Like,
yeah. My issue as I look at this of the four guys, Boomhauer, Hank, Dale, and Bill. I just know all four of them voted for Trump, and I don't want to see that.
That's all you can see.
I don't want to learn about that.
There's very few things I can think of that I both laugh at having like fled my small town. That I know people who still live in those small towns that also are endeared to this show because Hank managed to walk a weird line.
Yeah.
And I really, considering that I know damn well after reading interviews with Roseanne that her new show's not going to do it.
Yeah.
I really want to see what the King of the Hill show might be able to bring up in conversation
politically
yeah. that I don't know that anybody else can say. And I would find it particularly funny if the man who created Beavis and Butthead, that gets so credited with like where we are now,
yeah.
is also the person that has the only show that can have a conversation about this.
That's a reasonable point, actually. Yeah. Hmm. I may be on board.
Plus, I used to have an uncle that talked like Boomhauer, and it's fucking hysterical.
Yeah, I've never watched all of King of the Hill. I watched a little bit of it, and I think it's not on any streaming services right now. So I watched about as much as I watched Futurama, and I really liked it. But Hannibal Revival conversations have formally begun.
All right, Randy, you have to stop here for a little pause break.
Yep.
Because Hannibal is giving you the option. Would you like to choose to eat a toe, a finger, or a belly button?
Do I get to see how it's prepared first?
This is your monkey's paw, Chris.
Oh, I know. I got it.
They are all going to be raw.
Oh.
Is well, it that any sound belly like... button? Is like a conceptual thing?
Yeah. All belly buttons. Yeah. I'm going to go with belly buttons. I like it. I think it's a metaphor for life.
Oh,
I'm going to consume the navel and in so doing, consume the world.
We get to pick whose belly button?
Whoa. Whose belly button would you think would be tasty?
Tasty? No, I'm picking for Randy. I'm trying to get to like who would have the best combination of like lint and body sweat.
Oh, God.
Mitch McConnell.
Oh.
Yes.
It's got to be someone political.
Some turtle McConnell. Belly button.
Mitch McConnell's a turtle. He doesn't have a belly button.
Steve Bannon's belly button.
Oh, God. Oh.
He was hatched out of an egg.
So I don't know how much we know about this. This seems to be a talks are ongoing kind of thing. Brian Fuller has said that conversations couldn't start until 2 years after the final airing of season 3. Neoprod, whoever the fuck Neoprod is on Twitter, has started those conversations. This takes time.
That is so, really interesting. I'd
Neo
love to know
Productions or something?
Yeah.
What was written in that they had a 2-year non-compete with themselves or whatever to keep from talking about it?
I don't know.
I mean, maybe it was about shopping it to another network.
Might have been.
Yeah.
Either way, that's great. I know some people that are jumping up and down about this.
Do you know what would be awesome? If he could get that picked up also on Starz, since he's now there.
Yes.
That would be another great way for Starz to like continue to build up.
That's reasonable. And I actually, Starz, given what they did with American Gods, that kind of fits what they did with Hannibal. That would make sense.
And how much more gruesome it could be with the people, you know, Spartacus was on there.
Mostly excited about this just because I love the plan that they outlined when Hannibal got canceled and they kind of spitballed like, well, here's what we were going to do with it. And the way it was going to dovetail or
into
the way it might dovetail now, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
I really want to see them do that.
This is an early story, so I don't know how much faith I have in it, but I'm really excited that Judge Dredd Mega City 1, the TV show they're working on, people who did Dredd, are in talks with Carl Urban to bring him back as Dredd.
See, we talked about like there was rumors, but now they're like, yeah, we are talking to him.
We're talking to him.
And Urban has said he's interested.
Yeah.
And fuck yeah, that guy was super excited. Yep. He was so gung-ho to be in Dredd that he was the one who said, I refuse to take off my helmet.
I will not take off my helmet.
That is part of it. And that is love for a character.
Yeah.
Based on the little bit I've seen, it sounds like his only reason really for not being involved with the show is if he doesn't feel like
it's going to be
good.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I know that Mega City 1 is not centrally based around Dredd. Like, it's not going to be – just because he's involved isn't going to suddenly make it a Dredd show. It's more the world.
But it'd be like doing Gotham without Batman.
Yeah. But I still want him involved just because to me, his involvement will tie it directly to the movie aesthetic.
I
and
agree.
I just want to see that movie on screen again.
Yeah, I agree.
Please, please.
All right. Last story we have here is a little story where – I don't know if you guys know much about Dan Harmon, creator of Community, Rick and Morty, Harmon Quest, a few other things.
Serious guy.
Dan Harmon has a, let's call it a tendency, to speak his mind.
He's a bit
so
volatile.
Say that maybe someone was like, hey, why'd your show Community die? Politically, the answer might be, well, you know, a lot of things happened. We got 6 seasons. We're very pleased with it. We all think we're going to do the best product. That would be one way to handle it. Or you could say, Donald Glover did it. So he didn't do it in a mean way, but he basically did say, yeah, when Donald Glover left, that was basically the death of the show. He's like
– he waited a while since
he
did.
Like, I feel like he mumbled some kind of version of the – the party line for a little while.
I just think it's hilarious because he's not wrong. He mentions, and I forgot about this, he says Donald riffs stuff on the spot. He says there was this transitional point where we literally started writing the script and then Donald says something funny. And people forget, I forget this, despite the fact that he is so involved with Atlanta and that he was a 30 Rock writer, that Donald Glover was not just a part of the show. He was like one of the guys in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just came off his Emmy in 30 Rock and quit.
Yeah. And so it makes sense that his departure was not just the character Troy, which was not as big a deal, but Donald Glover leaving the show. And that does make sense that sort of had something to do with it. Yeah.
This was one of those possible clickbaity articles that I had to read based on the way it was phrased of like, what exactly did Harmon say?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I read it, I was like, that's actually really nicely put. Because at first I thought, no, the Harmon said that the timeline point of the show was just was when Glover left and that they just coincided with about the time we got bored with it. But that's not what he said. I was kind of impressed that he said, no, there'd come a point where we were writing scripts that said, and then Donald ends it with something funny.
To his credit, Dan Harmon at no point called Donald Glover any names or left him an angry voicemail that we know of, unlike his interactions with Chevy Chase. So
I feel like maybe he just needs a few more years to reflect on this, and he'll actually come to the correct conclusion that Dan Harmon killed the show. Because he's just so acerbic and just pushes everyone away and made drama bombs out of everything Chevy Chase and then got kicked off the show, brought back to the show.
Yep.
He was the show, but he was also the destruction of the show.
Yeah. Do you think that's where Rick and Morty's going to go eventually? He and Justin Roiland are going to have some big falling out?
I mean, there was rumors already that that there was problems between them that they both said, like, no. But
if these things were smooth and lasted forever, they'd be boring and I wouldn't watch them.
Like NCIS.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron Sorkin is all over the place and it destroys Aaron Sorkin shows. But he's Aaron Sorkin and he makes Aaron Sorkin shows.
It's true.
I mean, if we lasted 5 years, there's some problem with us, guys.
Well, we got rid of Greg. I think when Greg left, that was sort of the death knell of the TV dudes. We used to write in their script or notes. And now Greg says something about Connie Britton's feet.
That's what y'all keep handing me. It's just a card that says, and then say the Greg thing. The fuck does that even mean?
And you have not once talked about massaging Connie Britton's feet. What did we bring you for, Les?
Jesus. Less. A year ago, Randy, you pointed us to the show The People of Earth over on TBS, and you're like, hey guys, this is new Wyatt Cenac's new
I
show.
I like Wyatt Cenac.
You like Wyatt Cenac. He was in the news for his dramatic departure, I think, from The Daily Show.
And I like Anna Gasteyer, who's also in this show.
Yeah. So you're like, we got to check out the show. And I recall us not being all that into it. So. Yeah. Count me surprised when you put on our agenda for this week that we were going to come back for season two and talk about the show again.
So the funny thing is I didn't watch much past the first few episodes either, but I remember liking it to some degree and I thought it was interesting. And so I was like, oh, well, TBS's new show called The Guest Book. It's by Greg Garcia, who did My Name is Earl and
Raising Hope
and generally does good shows and has a good cast in it. And I'm like, oh, so they're launching a new comedy block and let's check back in on People of Earth. Mm. And I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, guys.
So I didn't watch any of season one of People of Earth, but I remembered what I remembered from listening to that show, Randy, was that you were kind of pleasantly surprised by it and said, okay, Cenac's better than I expected.
Yep.
But also everyone else in the group is quirkier than expected. Mm-hmm. And then they were also playing from the alien side. And so it seemed like there was potential for this to go. So when I sat down to watch the season premiere of season two.
Yeah.
That was a freaking crazy amount of mythology set up to be in a sitcom. Like, it ran through – it was like watching Galaxy Quest on Fast Forward for a second and, like, ran through all of this shit and then started. And I was like, what the hell sitcom am I watching?
One that's not funny.
Right.
Where are the jokes?
And I don't – here's the thing. There's funny people in this show.
Yeah.
I don't know how this show isn't funny. But, like, H. Shawn Benjamin has a heavy role in this show. And he's funny. I don't know what happened.
This show is fucking depressing. It is a bunch of broken people.
Yeah. That's the setup. That's the problem. That's why there's no jokes. Yeah, the show setup is sad.
Yeah, it's all these people that have gone, like, they keep trying to harp on this one guy who apparently lost his wife in some fucking tragic.
Turned out to be a robot? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, she turned out
to be a robot. She was a robot.
Yeah, so he keeps having dreams of her dream. And he's
traumatized by it. And everyone else is just like, oh, this guy and his quirks. And I hope he'll get over it. We just need to go over there and pull him out of his funk. I'm like, guys, this is someone who's going through trauma. Yeah. And you guys just are trying to make a joke.
This is the thing I think I found intriguing. And I still find intriguing about it. It is trying to blend this sort of darker, like, the big reveal of last season, apparently, since I didn't watch it either, was that they all had been abducted as kids, and that's why they all sort of all gravitated together. I'm like, that's an interesting idea.
Fringe did it better.
But there's no funny to go with.
Yeah, they are actually frantically kind of scary tracking this down, and it feels like a Fire in the Sky as a sitcom is a weird, weird tone.
Yeah. Do you remember that show, Mr. Sunshine?
Matt
Perry?
Yeah.
Yes.
Matthew Perry does this show where he's like trying to be all like happy and like help cheer people up there in an emotional support group. Yep. And nope, those two things didn't mesh. Yeah. And then they're doing it again here with people that like went through a trauma lost loved ones.
With Mr. Sunshine, the mythology to get into was that he was also running a sports center in Arizona or New Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing was the depressing mythology is like alien abductions and stuff. Yeah, so like I will probably watch some, I don't know. It's just not funny.
It's just not funny. I will say this, just for the record. Nassim Pedrad is hot. That's all I got. That's all I've got. That's my only takeaway from this is that, where I know her from. Oh, she was on Mulaney. So she must do exclusively terrible shows, but she's very cute.
Based on the tiny bit I watched, the best parts to me were like H. John Benjamin and the other aliens conspiring to continue to hide themselves, but kind of reveal themselves. Like, that was the only part at all that I got a kick out of, was just one of them standing there with half his face ripped off going, nah, I don't want to talk to him on the phone. I don't want to do this over the phone.
Yeah.
It's just H. John Benjamin. Yeah. Whatever he says, I'm just listening to.
And staring at him going, that voice is coming out. Archer's voice comes out of you.
Yeah. Well, it also comes out of a can of vegetables. So.
Yes, but somehow that's less
weird.
Yeah.
The guest book was the other new one. We saw the first two episodes. I believe the other one's coming out. Yeah. That's what we're recording. And
I would like to challenge you guys.
Okay.
If you had to watch the remainder of the season of People of Earth or The Guestbook.
The Guestbook.
Really?
Yeah.
In a heartbeat. At least it's a rotation of
stories. No, The Guestbook's going to rotate people.
Oh, my God. This was so terrible. That second episode where it's all about, like, drugging an atheist and turn. What the fuck was that?
No. I felt like I was watching Room 104, but with slightly less teeth. I was like, no, I expect this level of fucked upness from 104.
Yeah.
But,
and Abed, I can't remember the actor's name.
Yeah, Danny Pudi.
Danny Pudi, him, like. And, like, it was a whole fucked up, like, relationship that he has that it felt like, we're supposed to be in some way rooting for this couple. But I'm like, no, they
hate them both.
They don't belong together.
They should end. Yeah. But at least episode one started to set up a Greg Garcia universe that I was like, Crabman showed
Crabman
up.
Crabman shows up. Yeah.
I love Night Court. So I love Mac from Night Court.
Although his role is weird, it's like he is just like he's the Rod Serling who shows up in the five.
They're
first
definitely
going to
build
Twilight
it.
Zone,
they're definitely going to build it more, and they were already blending in that like the stripper's not going away.
Yeah,
her stepson that's an idiot. Him getting locked in the trunk twice, him accidentally locking himself back in the trunk was one of the like best little bits of the show for me.
But no, it was funny.
It was starting to set up a town.
Yeah.
That I was like, okay, all right, this might work. Garrett Dillahunt's clearly going to keep being there.
Garrett Dillahunt's in everything.
But he's in everything Greg Garcia does. The first episode gave me hope for it, and I even like the way they blended in the next episode footage.
Yeah, the structure of it, the whole – it's an anthology, but the stuff kind of continues, and you'll see some characters recur. Like, the structure is interesting, but the show isn't.
Yeah, but that second episode, like, the more it
– oh, my God.
I mean, every minute we got further in it, I was going, you're making me hate Stockard Channing.
Yeah, by the way, what a waste of Stockard Channing and Danny Pudi and Marilyn Rockjob and the woman whose name I can never remember who plays the wife in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
I loved her on Crashing. I hated her here.
I thought Danny Pudi was pretty good in the first episode for what he was given.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's Danny Pudi. Anything you could have given him something slightly better.
What was Powerless? So
yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah. He felt like kind of like a real dude who's just in a shitty situation. But yeah. The whole everything
writing
was
in the
just
guest
wrong.
Book is such a forced.
Oh, I know.
Thing.
Yeah,
yeah. It's everything's so convoluted. And yeah, like, okay.
I want this to work, and it's not there.
So this is how I think. You remember how much Dimitri and Jeslin hated Room 104?
Mm-hmm.
I feel about the guest book the way they felt about Room 104. It's like, why would you do this?
You're correct. They were wrong.
Yes, I know.
It paid, like ATX Fest had Garcia there, and he spoke in a couple of
I'm
the showrunners
so
things.
I didn't see this.
And so watching guest book, I'm like, man, but I heard you talk about this. Like, I know that there was good work put into this show, but it's not clicking for me.
Is it possible, and I know this sounds crazy, that TBS is not a very good network?
They're a mixed bag.
They are really
What do they have
bag.
That's good?
Search Party is fantastic.
But that could be the outlier. That could
Wrecked
through.
Is pretty good. Funny.
Is it? Yeah. Okay, all right.
Wrecked is pretty funny.
Because I like Sam B, but I put that on Sam B, not on
Angie
TBS.
Tribeca was pretty funny.
Oh, shit, that's TBS.
I couldn't get into Angie Tribeca.
I mean, it was
like
pretty
it,
good at first.
It's
and then it becomes
note.
A little bit, a little tedious.
But yeah, I'm really liking Wrecked. Search Party's great.
All right, so it's maybe not TBS, it's these shows.
Yeah.
They're a mixed bag. They're not. Their network is not consistently picking winners. They don't.
But I am still intrigued. I feel like overall there is a network identity that I'm getting a sense of.
That makes sense. I mean, because the thing is, I would have backed either of these shows. Someone says Wyatt Cenac coming off The Daily Show is going to do a comedy about alien abduction. I'm like, oh, that's weird, but let's try it. And Greg Garcia, who's done some very successful comedies, has Stockard Channing and Danny Pudi and a bunch of other people on board.
Doing
he wants to do
cameos,
an anthology.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, fucking greenlight that. I totally do both these shows.
Well, let's move on to Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later.
Yes.
I can't believe they had a second season of this, and surprised me how it just dropped like a couple months ago. They started advertising. I was like, oh sweet!
I had no idea they were even doing it.
I don't understand Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh my
So that seems to be the entire take I see, like on my Twitter feed and friends group and stuff. It's always either really really love Wet Hot American Summer, or you appreciate that there's a shitload of good people in it, but it. Just doesn't work for you.
Yes, that's
Randy,
where I am. Yeah.
Here's what you need to do. You need to watch the original movie first on weed.
is that what I'm missing? The weed component?
I feel like you need to like just kind of let go and embrace the silliness of it.
Because there's stuff I loved. I laughed at a bunch of this stuff. There was stuff I loved. And then they do something where they're like, they're clearly riffing. I hate seeing improv when I see it. And I could see where, like, there was no script and you guys just made all of this up. And when the points where that really shows,
but when they
really annoys me.
They say it. I love
when they make fun of it. But even
you
that gets
in
on my nerves.
Episode 2?
Yeah. Like, at the end when they basically reveal that this was all bullshit from a book. And then the running gags of like, wait a minute. But it doesn't make any sense that President Reagan, this was all to teach us a lesson. That doesn't make any – when they keep picking at it, that was cracking me the hell up.
Yes. Okay, good.
But it's like there was so much of that I'm like too much of it didn't work for me.
So there was something I saw today about jokes per minute, which is something I always love about like 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt of just – it makes things rewatchable because I genuinely did miss like a whole undercurrent of jokes while I was laughing at other jokes. Wet Hot American Summer has that density of – even the musical cues, I don't know if you've caught the amount of not licensed but so closely ripped off that like
all the names
shit.
Of people that they say.
Yes.
Kelly LeBrock or whatever.
So, I mean, they did 91 just as well as they did the revival movie.
Yeah.
Like, but it's never a single joke in Wet Hot American Summer that works for me. Like I can't think of any one line that floors me or one thing that really works.
I can think of one.
It sits on a tone that is so difficult to walk for me, that is satirical without being mean,
absurdist parody.
Yes,
yeah.
it's absurd without just
this genuine love to it.
Yeah, without just being awkward. We are like too often absurdist humor just ends up being like Michael Cera and Zach Galifianakis staring at people until someone laughs.
See, this one crossed into that territory for me more than once.
Yeah, and Wet Hot just for whatever reason it never. There's something about. There's an earnest sweetness to Showalter and Wayne, like all the stuff that they do. Michael Ian Black on his own can get a little too snarky and snide for me. There's something about Wet Hot that pulls all of these performers into that sweet spot that like Polar doesn't sit in for me on her own. Like, none of these people quite work like that. And I think Showalter just directed Big Sick. Like, I really like his feel for comedy. But yeah,
it's interesting to me that
this is
that
a very special series for me.
This is very – it's clearly a very special series for everyone involved because other than Bradley Cooper, everybody comes back for it. None of these
who
people have time.
Make it?
No. Most of these people do not have time for this show. They don't have time to make this.
Paul Rudd's grunge transformation is amazing.
That's the thing. I want to like this more than I do. I do like it. But I want to love it like my friends love it because I watch it and I'm like, it's always a background watch for me. It's always like I wind up doing other stuff.
I love it.
I didn't get into the movie when it first came out. And so it took me probably a year before I sat down and watched it and really got
I had to rewatch it.
But
can I ask, did you guys go to camp?
Yeah.
Did you go to camp?
I worked at a scout camp.
I went to a Boy Scout camp once.
Okay, because I feel like it does seem like if you ever went to a camp, it's like it heightens it a little bit.
Yeah, I also wrote, like, I wish I'd gone to a camp like this, and instead I got sent to, like, church camps and shit. But the first TV series, the first day or last day camp, first day camp, the last TV series of it, happened to drop in a week where I just needed some – I needed silly news right then bad. And I can't remember what was going on. I don't think it was as bad as this week.
I remember feeling that way, and I was like, oh, okay.
I'm sure Trump had pulled ahead in the polls or some shit, and I just really needed, like, Wet Hot American Summer. But I really – when I saw that that was dropping this Friday, I was like, oh, thank God. I really need stupid week at camp right now. And also, it answers a question it'd kind of been bothering me. If you go back and watch Revenge of the Nerds
– yeah.
Most of that movie is a sex crime.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go back and watch Overboard, most of that movie is a sex crime. Like, there's so many of these things that I can't even believe that they rent Soul Man to be like, there's no way Soul Man's streaming places, right?
No.
Like, there's some of these movies that you go back and try to watch anything from the 80s and go, well, you can't nostalgia remake most of these. I mean, they're horrible.
Yeah.
So what of them can be referenced and not be shitty? And somehow Wet Hot is mining the crap out of it. Like
Alyssa Milano basically playing like a character. I'm sure she actually played in a couple different movies.
Yeah. She's just Rebecca De Mornay. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Okay.
Evil Babysitter.
That is the gag that killed me. And it's because I live in a dark place when they're all like, and this, let's bring out the actress who played the crazy babysitter. And the two guys, the gay guys who murdered her are like, oof, hey. That killed me. Every time that got referenced,
we're going to bury the body. We're going to spread it across the highways.
I kept waiting for some kind of reveal that like she was not really dead, because that was a weirdly dark note and otherwise a very light show. Yeah. And that was the one I loved.
Chris Maroney's fight in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
I was not ready for like, but he won't be here for it. Crack. Like, fuck.
Yeah. Just like her pounding Molly Shannon pounding the face with just blood. Like when it just like steers into like ultraviolet.
Marino and Lake Bell, that whole sex scene where like, you know, you're going to pick a mask randomly. When did you take a mold of my face?
H. John Benjamin, when he's the can and he goes like stops at the diner. I'd like to get this and a pair of your hot buns or whatever. And all of a sudden, it's just
in the back.
He's a can fucking the waitress. Oh, yeah.
And Chris, like, that's why Chris Maroney got mad at him. It's like, you cheated on her and fucked your way through all the waitresses. And like, man, I was going through some shit. Like, you're a can of vegetables.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really did like a lot of this. But there was definitely times when I stared, I'm like, why was that joke there? There was a lot of stuff to it.
Yeah. That at this point is also self-referential to other stuff they've done.
Yeah, I don't argue with people on like online about like why they don't get like I understand that this is definitely in the sweet spot of comedy that either it either really clicks for you or it doesn't.
Yeah, I wanted to like it so much more than I actually did, but it is undeniably good.
Yeah, man, I love it, and I don't know if we're gonna get more.
I was surprised by this. So.
Yeah, but they're able to get all those people, and I'm sure they're doing it for nothing.
Here's what I want. They keep doing the gag about how young they all are. Wet Hot American Summer 10 years later, this is 1990, mm-hmm. and they're all playing like 30-something or 20-somethings.
Yeah, they're like
I want Wet Hot Summer 100 years later, and they're all cyborgs in the future.
Okay.
That's what I want. And don't tell me that's weirder than what they would do.
No, they could just do one-off 45 48-minute movies. I would watch
Wet Hot American Summer, Space Camp.
I'd watch all of Tiger Claw.
They could do Space Camp. Space
oh
Camp.
My God, they would totally do Space Camp.
They could remake Space Camp, Camp with River Phoenix.
Yes.
Wait, that was Joaquin Phoenix.
Yep. God, oh, please shit. Somewhere let Michael Showalter hear that David Wayne, please make Space Camp.
All right, guys, let's talk about Game of Thrones. This was the third episode. It was fucking nuts. Les, you didn't watch it.
I just finished the third episode.
Of the season one. Season.
Yes. Yes. Oh, no, so Ned Stark.
Yeah. He's doing great.
He's doing good. He's going to sit on the throne, right?
Yeah. Ned Stark is in an interesting place this season.
He might win it. I don't know.
You never know.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if Daenerys is going to learn to get along with the Dothraki.
Holy shit.
Like, where this ends was fucking amazing. Hey, we're going to go into spoilers, folks.
Yeah, for sure.
Les, is that cool with you, or you need to step out?
Oh, no. I've already spoiled the crap out of this. I got ready for the question about how it ends.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So let's talk, first of all, Stark family reunion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that threw me for a loop. Because we were talking already, and we were like,
I know.
Arya's
I saw her
down.
I saw her come up. I'm like, oh, holy shit, she is there. I was so happy.
What was that whole thing about her and Nymeria? A little bait and switch?
I think they just wanted to show the wolf was still out there.
Yeah.
There's just a touchback on that. But I loved seeing them all together.
Mm.
I love Littlefinger noticing little things. There's little things that are going on. Like people have referenced that Bran says about the chaos is a ladder, which is Littlefinger said that. And Littlefinger notices him saying that and does not like it.
Yeah. Like, there's the whole thing with Littlefinger giving him this dagger.
Yeah.
And the history of these daggers is kind of weird. There's two of them. One of them was used in an attempt to kill Bran.
Yeah.
And but that's the one that he gives back to him.
But it's clear the dagger that Littlefinger, like, don't we know Littlefinger used that dagger? Don't we think that he basically tried to have Bran killed? That he was working with the Lannisters at that point?
I read a theory, and this is all speculative, and I don't know how they would even resolve this unless Bran reveals it, because he's all-knowing.
Yeah.
But the idea was that they thought the knives, the Targaryen, or what's it called? What's the type
Valyrian
of
steel.
Valyrian steel little daggers initially belonged to Joffrey. And Joffrey tried to kill Bran because his father, he was trying to impress his father, Robert Baratheon, who said something about someone should put that kid out of his mercy, or out of his misery because he was crippled. Well,
the thing, it was done to frame Tyrion.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was Littlefinger.
And Joffrey could have tried to frame him as well.
Joffrey didn't have Joffrey's like the Trump of the Westeros. He doesn't have the brains to think of something like that. I don't think Joffrey's not a schemer. Joffrey's a whiny little brat, and I'm glad he's dead.
But okay, I'm still so mixed on the motivations of Littlefinger, because it seems like his love of Catelyn is genuine, right?
It is, but Catelyn's gone. And his love of Sansa is a possessive, it's a creepy kind of possessive love. And he's starting to realize he's not going to get to have Sansa. And so now he's thinking about what he wants.
But at this point, he seems so close to her that he's positioning himself as a potential hand if she were to take power.
But she's seen through him. Sansa knows what Littlefinger is.
Hmm. Yeah.
Littlefinger's got to be figuring out his next move. And his best move is to ally himself back with the Lannisters again and to say he was with them the whole time. Mm. And that's where I think he's going. The smart move for for any of the Starks, if they could figure it out, is to kill Littlefinger now. Because Littlefinger only hurts, he doesn't help, just like Pride.
Bran should be able to do that, except for he's a fucking weirdo. I love how we see the scene of all three of the kids reunite, because we get Arya reuniting with Sansa. It's kind of a cool scene where they're like talking about stuff, like where the paths they've walked.
Yeah.
But then they go meet Bran, and Sansa's trying to be all judgmental, like, Arya, you're this weird little murder girl. And Bran is talking in riddles and trying to bring up my rape as if that's like common chit chat.
It is a little weird.
It is in Westeros, though, right?
In Westeros, that's fine, common chit chat. But I'm like, okay, Sansa, didn't you also just feed your enemy to some dogs?
Yeah, well.
Aren't you also a little bit fucked up?
You know what's interesting about this is
you're in the game.
We are seeing Game of Thrones is generally a let's see what bad things can happen to the characters.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting this season, the Stark reunion is kind of a happy moment, even though it's awkward, it's weird, and like nobody's super happy about it, but these kids survived all this shit and got together again in their ancestral family home. That is not where the smart money goes.
I love how that it's like,
and we're all back together. There was never a younger sibling that everyone just fucking forgot about.
Yeah. He fell out the window.
Where's Rickon?
Yeah.
No one remembers Rickon? About Rickon.
Rickon got killed.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. No. He did in the Serpentine. Ramsay killed him with an arrow. Do you not remember?
I do not remember Ramsay.
Yeah, Ramsay killed him with an arrow. That's what started the battle.
Oh,
with
the Battle of the Bastards? The Battle of the Bastards. Running across the field.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Rickon's dead.
I was thinking, oh, where's Rickon?
No, Ramsay killed Rickon.
I got to say, it's been entertaining, too. I've literally just seen the Three-Eyed Raven, like, last week. Yeah. in, like, episode one.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me.
That's yeah. Bran.
Yeah, I know, and now it's Bran. Like I'm literally watching Bran try to court somebody, and like, what's that raven about? Like, no, don't worry about it. And then literally all the news for the last 2 days.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
I would like to talk about, beyond the final scene, which is fucking amazing, my favorite moment here was Arya versus Brienne.
That so was pretty badass.
Good.
Although, I feel like Arya is showboating a little bit. More than I would think Arya would.
I don't think she's showboating.
She was handing hands the dagger to Brienne to kind of show her, but she has to do a flip, flip, flippity, flip, flippity, flip, 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 flip. Check out my dagger.
Yeah.
I was like, you don't just hand her the dagger, dude. What are you trying to do?
The reason she wanted to train with Brienne.
Yeah. She knows Brienne's a badass.
No, because Brienne beat the Hound.
Oh, yeah.
And Arya wants to kill the Hound.
True.
I don't know if she doesn't think the Hound is dead or if she just wants to know if she could have beaten him, but I think it may be a thing where she's like, I watched the Hound bleed out. I want to know if I could have beaten him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that was. And I think that's where that all came from.
Does it seem like there was this odd leap in skill level from what we saw of her training in the House of Black and White?
No, not at all.
Versus
because
all of a sudden this, like, no, you know, because she's doing little stick battles and she's blind and I don't know what's going on there, like how good she is. Yeah. And then all of a sudden she's a master.
Yeah. Well, no, because we were seeing her training against the best assassins in the world. And if she could hold her own against them, she obviously was pretty good.
Yeah.
The fact that she couldn't beat them doesn't really mean anything because she was up at a certain skill level.
Okay.
I think I like the idea that Arya got to this level, that we got to see it. And that we don't know how much time took place in any of these things, so I like that she was training for a long time.
It's pretty badass. And seeing that, like, how they shot it with Brienne, that she's not holding back at a certain point.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, okay, you actually want me to give it my all. And, and she's going for it against her. She's taking broad swings with a big fucking sword.
And we also see that Arya's weakness, her sort of her being small, and that kind of becomes her strength.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's quicker, that she's able to get underneath some things. I thought that was a fantastic scene. I would like a Brienne, Podrick, Arya on the road show at some point. I think that just give me that spinoff.
Okay, given I don't remember all these things and you're like, oh, Rickon died. What happened to Gendry? Did he just ride off on a boat?
Gendry? Oh, yeah. Gendry wandered off on a boat. We never saw him again. He's very important in the books.
He's got to come back, right?
Nope. I don't think we're going to see him again in the show.
It's so funny how important.
In the books, he's so important.
It's funny how important Gendry is and how important Lady Stoneheart are.
Both gone.
And we're not seeing them.
No. And I don't want to. I feel like they just detract from the show at this point. I like what Benioff and Weiss are doing better than what George R. R. Martin did. I felt like George R. R. Martin had this would expand the characters beyond what he needed to, and the TV budget and the TV realities mean that you have to keep things a little more focused, and that's why I think the show's gotten better because they're focused on Eye on the Prize, end of the show, and so they're not introducing 100 weird characters who work in the fucking bakeries at King's Landing that I get to see 5 chapters from their point of view about making hot cross buns for the Lannisters. I don't need that shit. What I need is dragons blowing shit up, and I got that.
Okay, there's a scene I want to make fun of here.
Yeah, okay.
There's a scene where Jon Snow finds the dragon glass in this cave.
Yep.
And so he takes Daenerys over there and – by the way, the people that are shipping the relationship between Jon Snow and Daenerys, despite from what us, the audience, now knows.
He's her nephew?
He's related. Her nephew. Yeah.
Yeah. That is wrong. No one in Westeros would ever do that.
I'm just like, someone else was like, hey, remember how we were all disgusted by the Lannisters and their relationship? But now we're like, yeah, cousins fucking, yeah. Right.
I don't know. Are we?
You're totally down with that?
Whatever. It's fine. It's Westeros, man.
But, okay, he goes into this cave.
Don't think about it, Jake.
And he starts showing her these cave drawings.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they're all these really simplistic ones. And then all of a sudden he's like, look at this one. And
It's the man and the tree people. Oh, yeah. Look over here. Totally White Walkers. I was like, all right, dude. Are you hiding an awl in your hand? Like, did you just chisel this shit?
Yeah. Someone made a joke that he sent Davos in ahead to draw all that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wait. Look at this one. That's totally you and me making out.
Here's me boning drawing. You. It's clearly that's what's going to happen.
That's what the tree people wanted, I guess. That's what the
tree people wanted. I've tried that line. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Fuck off, Jon Snow.
Come on, baby. It's what the tree people want.
Parlor tricks. That's all it was.
You know, that is the other side of the TV business that you can't do in the books. In the books, you can spend a lot of time. In the TV, sometimes you got to do shortcuts. And like, look, there's writing in the cave. Just go with us on this, all right? just go with us.
It was just such a silly scene.
It was a little bit, yeah.
And then they're having all these like long moments of looking at each other.
Yep.
It was interesting to see Theon just kind of roll up on the beach.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, hey, oh, fuck.
Yeah, right. Oh, you guys hate me. I actually loved the moment with Jon and Theon. I was glad to see them finally have that moment.
It was well executed. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you got a bunch of history that has not been resolved. And you guys don't know wherever either.
I wonder what poor Theon's fate in all this. I feel like he's going to die at some point.
He's got to have a.
Yeah. But I don't know. He's got to be on the list. I don't know where that's going.
Everything that Davos does is hilarious to me.
I love Davos.
He is such great comic relief, apparently. Yep.
Davos and Bronn.
Yeah.
The workaday guys in this sort of noble world. Yeah.
Okay. Wait, was there another scene that we missed before we jump over to Bronn and Jaime?
Almost certainly. I can't think of what it is.
Yeah.
A lot happened this week.
Yeah, I think we can probably jump over to it because this was the end scene.
No, there was one interesting thing, and that was Dany is always the sort of straight-laced, boring, you know. She doesn't get to have the fun talk. So her interest in what Missandei and Grey Worm got up to, her sort of, girl, what happened? I loved that bit of that little bit that we saw of the character was fun. I liked that.
And I like Jon Snow's little reality check with her. It's like, if you're going to be an asshole like all these other ones, why is anyone going to follow you?
I like that too.
More of the same. I'm like, I think she kind of needs that reminder, but that's more just kind of like realign your focus where you want to go, which is what we get.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because, okay, we jump into this last scene, and Bronn is back, which is
I love Bronn.
Awesome.
Yep.
Very exciting to see him. And, I mean, it was Bronn and his motivation, they kind of muddy it. Because the dude is super loyal to Jaime.
As long as he has money.
And they keep wanting to frame it by the money, but I don't necessarily think that's true.
He was just as loyal to Tyrion. And at some point, he's going to have to choose because they're on the other sides now.
So we have the talk.
Yeah.
And then the attack, I guess. And, you know, he's talking about, you know, the money, how he's interested in that, but he wants something more. He's very ambitious.
Yeah. He wants a castle.
But when the dragon shows up and it's a holy shit moment. I mean, it's already a holy shit moment.
But that's what I loved. I mean, we knew the dragon was probably coming, but the Dothraki horde showing up and we get to see them attack.
The yell and the horse riding. That it's like, was oh, this is super badass.
Good.
But then, the ace up the sleeve.
Yeah, the dragon.
The dragon who just destroys Rex Shop. And we're like, I watched the after clip where Benioff and Weiss are talking about, like, when you put like two of the main protagonists like face off like to the death.
Yeah.
That's such a raising the stakes level that everyone is so invested. And hell yeah.
Well, that's what I've seen a lot of people talking about this, of course, in the past few years. Nobody can keep spoilers in their pants. So
is that the expression?
That's the expression.
Okay.
I'm coining it right now. People were talking about rooting for everyone in that scene who are at odds. Like, we love Jaime, we love Bronn, and we love Daenerys, and one of them's got to lose.
Dickon can die.
Dickon is the new hero for our time.
Why?
Yeah, man.
He's very muscular. Did you see those GQ shoots?
You know, no, I didn't actually.
Oh, that guy is ripped under that armor.
Dickon is, he's the everyman. He's the every dick that we all wish we were.
Okay. This went full D&D here.
Yes, it did.
When the dragon's swooping in, the battle, the hordes are fighting against each other. You have the knights versus the wild, free horse-riding army.
Yep.
And then you have this in particular, when Bron goes to the, what's it called, like a trebuchet or something?
The ballista. I thought, I didn't know it was going to be there.
Yeah.
We'd seen it set up, but I thought when we first saw the ballista, the dragon was going to die. So when he pulled out the ballista, I'm like, oh shit, something's going to happen
here. Became a full-on Rain of Fire with Matthew McConaughey kind of thing, but good.
But 10 times better than that.
Yeah. That whole scene was blowing me away.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. Like I say, I root for Bron. I love Bron. He's a good character. But then he shot the dragon. I'm like, oh, fuck Bron.
Yeah. I'm like, Bron, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
How they get to have their cake and eat it, too, in this scene is kind of silly. I imagine we're going to see a little bit more come up in the next week's scene.
We'll see.
But the... I mean, I don't know. Bron was everywhere. How's he, like, rescuing him, like, 5 or 6 times, it seems?
LeBron had action points to spend.
Yeah.
Right? That's a D&D reference.
and he made use of them.
Yes, he did.
That was him that must have dove and grabbed Jamie.
I think
right?
so. We don't know. It could have been Dickon. Dickon's a hero for our times. Maybe he saved Jamie's life. I'm trying to make Dickon happen. Hashtag Dickon. Hashtag Dickon of our times.
You're going hard on the Dickon. But
really, I mean, beating this Dickon thing to death.
Beating this Dickon to death.
Look, I can't keep Dickon in my pants. All right, that's expression, isn't it?
You're really dicking around here. So we have Jamie then, like covered in armor, dropping to the bottom.
Nobody's dead. Let's be clear here. Nobody's dead. The dragon's alive. Bron's alive. Jamie's alive. Dickon is alive.
A lot of those soldiers.
But those soldiers are all dead.
They are cremated.
What are the odds this show ends with everyone dead? Like everybody main character on the show so far dead.
Not unreasonable.
And nobody on the throne.
It feels very thematically accurate for George R. R. Martin.
I think it would be spectacular if literally like rando that you have never seen walks up and sits down like,
oh, fuck, what if it's Gendry? Gendry just shows up at the end.
Oh,
He's got the bloodline.
Yeah, that's what Gendry's going to be.
That'd be amazing if Gendry comes out of nowhere and becomes the king.
I totally want everyone to die and then be resurrected as part of the
White Walker army.
The White Walker army. And then you just see Gendry like
Gendry
rally
comes from
the
overseas
troops.
With like his with like an army. Yeah.
If Gendry comes back all big and massively bulked, they've
with
just
his
been
bull helmet.
Him. Yeah.
I'm just imagining like a Swords to Plowshares thing where like all the peasants from Python's Holy Grail are like, you know, King of the Britons. Pulling swords off and going off to the farmland.
I'm imagining the ending where the White Walkers rule everything, and then it becomes a sitcom where the White Walkers are like, "So how was work today, Bob?" And the White Walkers are just going about their lives, but they're just all dead.
Pretty sure casting that show will be a problem.
No, it's diverse. It's very diverse. But I really thought I loved this final sequence. And I love the way they left us off with not knowing where everybody's at, what's going to happen to the dragon. You know, we don't know if he's going to pull through. We got a what's going to happen next moment. I'm super excited to see what the ramifications. Here's the other thing. We now know that Cersei's one weapon against the dragons doesn't work.
No, we know that it did work.
It got blowed up. Do you assume they have lots of them?
Yes.
Okay.
I assume they're making a ton of these at King's Landing. But he had one.
Okay.
And it was effective because the dragon
he was able to do some damage
dumb
to it.
And goes, I'm going
to
go straight on at this arrow.
Serpentine, just like Rickon didn't.
Yeah, you fly, right? Curve, go side to side. Yeah,
but you know, if you're a dragon that's never been hurt in your entire life.
Yeah.
What, there's little guys down there with a little, with some mechanism. You know what it is. I mean, you know.
Dragons be stupid. All right, guys. We're going to end things there. We'll be back next week, of course, talking about this. And I don't know what's going to happen.
No, me neither. I'm excited.
Super excited.
Yep.
Les, Randy, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you, listeners. And until next week,
Dickon is the hero for our times.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.